Hello and welcome back to Scream Addicts. My name is Jason Jenkins. Call me Jinx. And sitting with me here today are you're not Brian.
I'm not Brian.
You're not who are you?
DJ Tanner.
Okay. And sitting next to
I'll buy that. That's fair.
We will explain here in a second once the other two introduce themselves.
The always lovable Paul.
Lovable?
And irascible.
Fair enough.
Lovably irascible.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah.
Sven.
Sven filling in for Cliff?
Next week I'm gonna use a fake name.
What fake
we
name?
We don't believe that.
Yeah, no, it's gonna happen.
Isn't Jinx technically a fake name because it's not really your name?
Shut up.
Oh.
Just shut up.
Use a fake name every week.
No, you know what? I've used that nickname for like 16 years now. I figure at this point it's mine.
It's still not working.
Did you give it to yourself?
No. Well, yes.
Personal question.
Yeah, kind of. No.
She comes here the first time around and starts calling your shit out.
Just kapow, right out of the gate. No. Well, I was always called that in school. Last name's Jenkins. Everyone called me Jinx. It kind of makes sense. But the first time I ever logged onto a bulletin board, if you people remember what that is, lived
Netscape?
In the 90s maybe, I used to post on a horror movies message board. And so my nickname I thought would be Jinx, and I've used it ever since. So that's enough about me. I don't like talking about me. Unfortunately, Brian could not make it here this week. He is working on a feature film put together by a good group of folks named...
Jealous.
I think it's Funtime Productions. They have actually knocked out two feature films in the last year, and they are working on a third, and I believe he is running audio on that movie. So that's where he is right now. He's actually making a movie, and the four people in this room are just talking about one. So
he's there right now, Friday.
Well,
or Thursday.
No, it's like Thursday. He's there now. It's a reason he's not here now.
Well, whenever you tell David this on Saturday, he won't be there.
Okay, for the three people who listen.
It was 2 days ago.
The angry librarian understands what I'm trying to say. He's in England and he still gets
it. He's the only one.
He's in the future right now.
He is listening to us right now. Isn't that weird to think?
No, it'll be 2 days from him, but still a day removed from us.
Fair enough.
It's always in the future.
It's an international dateline thing.
Sure. My head hurts already, and we're not even 3 minutes in. Okay,
we haven't even touched Nikki Wingding.
You're not calling him that during the show.
High five.
Did you two just high five over? He is a great director.
I know he is.
All right.
But his name is Nikki Wingding.
Is he a great director?
We'll talk about that here in a second. But
we'll see.
Before that, we should probably go ahead and explain. In Brian's absence, up until this point in this new version of Scream Addicts, ever since we stopped for a while, took a break, got rid of a couple of guys, we have had three absences, and we've handled it three different ways so far. leading up until this point. Now, this week, Brian wasn't able to make it because, again, he's working on a movie. So in his place... Hunter, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us why you're here?
I told you, I'm DJ Tanner. I'm here because Brian isn't here. I think we've covered these bases.
There were a bit more than three absences, if you count previous era.
No, I didn't. I just said no. We're not counting. There was like the trial run, and then there's the actual podcast.
A bit of an absence whenever there wasn't anybody missing, really.
Yeah. We don't like to talk about that. We don't like to talk about the old days.
Let's just keep rotating them in.
Yeah. So, okay, before we jump into the main movie of choice here, which I will withhold until we actually start talking about it, don't want to tease folks, even though they're probably going to look at the title and understand what we're going to talk about. Anyway, can we go ahead and chat for a second about anything we might have seen in the last week, horror-related? Maybe we've read a comic, read a book, watched a movie. Anybody?
I read She-Wolf number one last week.
That just came out this week. How was it?
It was last week.
That just came out last week. How was it?
Amazing. Rich Tomasso is a great writer. His art is really weird. It's like a artsy, surreal werewolf horror story. It's really good.
Sold. I just picked that up today.
It's wonderful.
I don't know why I didn't pick it up last week because it's a horror title. And somebody didn't recommend it to me.
Well, it's not.
No, it's fine.
It's horror, but it's not. It is, but kind of not.
Reading it a week late, don't know why. Just saying that.
That's fine. I read it Wednesday. Last Wednesday.
David, how about you?
No.
Hunt, DJ?
You're watching
DJ
The Town. Beach.
I'm watching The Beach, but...
The Beach is not a horror movie.
Jinx won't let it be a
It's
horror
a horrible
movie.
Movie.
No.
But it's not a
horror.
That's sad.
The guy who bashed Slumdog Millionaire is calling The Beach Danny Boyle's best movie. I call bullshit.
I saw the Slumdog trailer and said no.
Yeah. I saw the movie and wished that I was in the
Wouldn't
cast.
You be giving a shot from the trailer?
No, it wasn't my thing.
I'll loan it to you. It's a good movie.
I'm a grown man. I know what I do and don't like, and that didn't seem like a likable little thing.
Okay, what do you like about The Beach real quick? Because this is a horror podcast. And
what is there not to like about I wish we had a whole podcast to talk about The Beach. Can we do that instead?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Wait, we're taking this over.
I got
Beach Podcast.
Three votes here.
I've got my finger hovering over
Leo.
The record button. I will stop this right now.
All Leo all the time. All Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton is great.
She's in that movie?
She is.
She is. She's really, really good in it. Huh. Even in that, which is a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Somehow.
It's a great movie.
Tilda rises above.
I'm saying it's great.
Okay.
She weathers the tempest.
Have you seen anything?
No.
No, you're shaking your head. No.
Strong okay. No.
Go ahead and tell the audience a bit about yourself. Do you typically like horror movies? Are you in the filmmaking? Are you?
I'm a
just
student
those
at Georgia
two
State.
Things.
Yeah,
just those.
My two
just
trick
stick
pony.
To those, two.
Those are my two things. Yeah. No, I'm a film student at Georgia State.
Okay.
And those are the only credentials I have for this.
Are you? Okay. Are you film or film theory?
So far it's been film theory.
Okay,
start production soon.
But are you interested in making films?
I don't know.
No, you just want to talk about them. Yeah.
No, hey,
I just want to graduate,
come
really.
Come to the dark side.
The student debt, though. That's the horror movie.
That's the horror movie.
Somebody had to have made a movie by this point about the horrors of student debts, right?
I did. You watch it live through me every day. I'm a drug addicted, 60 grand in debt, dropout.
You're not a drug addict.
But you are a dropout.
No, I finished. Look,
I was just saying, I was trying to knock down the worst thing possible first and get that out of the way before we moved on.
Drug addict's more apt. I didn't drop out of college. I finished, but I am a drug addict.
I feel like shit got really.
I got it. It's an intervention.
I like nicotine and weed a lot.
Oh, well, weed doesn't count.
Oh.
For a minute, I thought
so
you said
nicotine
does?
No, nicotine's fine, too. It's
perfect.
You say drug addict, my mind immediately goes to heroin.
Duty
I see,
calls.
Like, Requiem for a Dream hip-hop montages in
you
my head.
You are a drug addict. Your mind goes right to heroin.
He starts scratching
Not
his arm.
Not anymore.
Oh, man, this is getting heavy.
Not anymore.
I don't like this.
Why is it heavy? He just smokes weed, and I'm fine now. So, anyway, moving on. So, horror movie-wise, for me, I've actually seen a few things. I'll only talk about a couple. I didn't read She-Wolf because it wasn't in my pull list last week. That's fine.
What the fuck?
But I did.
I think
catch
was some Seth bashing.
No,
I'm the only guy at that store. There are four other people at that store.
Fair enough. All right. No, I'm kidding. I did
are
watch
you?
A movie. No, not really. Wait a week to read that. Didn't even know it existed. Anyway, there a few months back, Dave, remind me when it was released. You probably know.
I have no idea.
Arrow put out this Blu-ray box set called The American Horror Project. The idea was to basically save these little-known 70s horror films from obscurity. They basically polish them up. They pop them on the disc. They fill those discs with all sorts of cool special features. And I thought that sounded like a great idea. And in a moment of insanity, I dropped $80 at my local FYE to buy the damn thing, and I popped the first movie in FYE.
It's like 50-something on Amazon.
It's $67.99.
It's that moment.
You know, and I don't have Amazon Prime. I probably should, with shipping, to get it to my house straight away.
Yeah.
It would have been like $80.
It's that painful moment in FYE when you're like on your phone trying to check Amazon.
Exactly.
For the price, but there's no service in FYE.
None.
You can't
they
check
have
Amazon.
A fucking cell phone blocker in that
Got
store.
To.
I'm certain of it.
Got to, because you walk right out of the store, LTE.
They said it was the roof. They always say it's the roof.
Bullshit. I can step 1 foot outside of that store and boom, service. I usually do that sometimes. I'm like, how much do you have this for? Oh, it's Scream Factory. It's $80.
Give me a second. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
Or I won't. I already bought it. See you later.
Sometimes I walk back in the store. Sometimes I just
on
walk on
animals.
By.
Yeah. Ride on animals.
But for whatever reason, I wanted that box set so bad, and it was just sitting right there, and it was only $80, and so I paid the
$80,
and I felt...
Only. It was only $80.
No, my
wallet
felt
this guy's a drug addict with $60,000 in debt.
You know, with the amount of discs that I buy that I need every week, I feel like a drug addict for that. But, no, I bought it, and I popped the first disc in. It was this...
all I need.
It was drugs of choice. And it was a movie called Malatesta's Carnival of Blood. Now, this was a couple of months ago.
That
I popped this movie
awesome.
In. Oh, doesn't it? Doesn't it? It's a horror movie set at a carnival, and it was in the 70s in Philadelphia. It's kind of a snapshot of a world you've never seen before.
It's
in
terrible,
movies.
Isn't it?
It is fucking awful, sir. It is terrible. I wanted to take the box set and punch it and then throw it away. I put that damn thing on the shelf just to stare at and grind my teeth. Every great once in a while, I was so angry at having dropped that much money that I never bothered to watch the other two
How
films
How much
in
money
the set.
Did you drop?
$80.
And change.
So, for whatever reason, I for the hell of it, I think was actually talking to Dave about that box set last week. I got the idea that I was going to go ahead and sell my box set to Dave if he wanted to buy it. But before I was going to do that, I was going to go ahead and just watch the other two movies and get them out of the way. Really, I was just going to watch the second movie to see what if I thought of it. And if it was as bad as the first, I wasn't going to get to the third. That second movie was called The Witch Who Came from the Sea. And it's not often, unfortunately, that I can watch a horror movie that truly disturbs me or sort of gets under my skin. And it's happened to me twice this week. The first time was that second movie, The Witch Who Came from the Sea. I love this movie, and I don't want to talk that much about it because it might wind up being my choice to bring in here next week so you guys can see it. Imagine Repulsion. Imagine Repulsion reimagined as this gritty, grindhousey slasher film.
I don't know what Repulsion is.
Okay. Good. I won't talk that much about
good?
It.
Because then nothing spoiled for me.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. I see. It to.
All right. I love that film, Repulsion. But I also love The Witch Who Came from the Sea. And I honestly, I think I'm going to bring it in next week because I love it so much and I want to share it. And you guys are probably going to hate it, except Seth, because he likes most things.
Movies,
that's a great thing. I actually envy Seth sometimes.
Right?
No, I think it's a good thing to like more than dislike more.
I like more things now that I started recreationally using weed. So
there you go.
So
the drug use has helped this podcast.
Yeah.
But it was a great movie, and it was one of those movies, one of those rare movies that after you watch it, it's sort of, with me anyway, it stuck with me a day or two after, and I was running sequences through my head over and over and over again. I really love that film. And weirdly enough, that doesn't happen often, but it happened twice this week, like I said, and the second time it happened was a movie that's in limited release right now. It actually showed up in Huntington, which is about, 30 minutes from where we're recording, 45 minutes from where I live. It's Nicholas Winding Refn's new movie, The Neon Demon. And so when Brian couldn't make it here this week, it was his choice. We all elected to head up that way, watch the movie, and come back here and podcast about it. Now, I had already seen the movie. This was my second time tonight. Hunter, you had already seen it too,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Okay, and we found out that the movie was leaving this week too, so we saw one of the very last showings of it. So before we hop into a discussion about it, guys, can we go ahead and give a thumbs up, thumbs down, what everybody thought about it? You've been keeping me in suspense. There was a very
I think we
long...
should withhold that. I don't think we should just give that away.
Don't torture me anymore. We all carpooled up together. Hunter didn't carpool with us. It was myself, Dave, and Seth.
She's
and,
a girl. She's a girl, yeah.
And
no girls allowed in my car.
Fair enough. It's like the little rascals when we carpool with Seth. But
kind of.
Yeah, we drove up, and I was in the back seat because Dave gets car sick. And I couldn't hear a damn thing because the windows were down. So I just saw them talking to each other, and all I heard in the back seat was...
And that
which was
music.
And well, no, that was on the way back. So on the way back,
I had no good music on the way.
Really?
That's just mean.
No, it was great music. I really wanted to see what you guys thought about the movie. And so, but again, backseat. And
we stood at Starbucks for a little bit.
And it was a very, very long drive back because I was very curious to see what you guys thought about it. But
he was sizing us up.
Kind of that. I'll get spoiler alert. I really, really love this movie. I think the second viewing sort of clinched that for me. And I'll talk about why here in a second. But if we can go down the line. Hunter, what did you think? Thumbs
Just
up, thumbs down?
I'm still mixed emotions on it.
Fair enough.
No thumbs for you.
Okay. Nope. Just kind of like a hand outstretched, palm down, so.
Wavering a little bit.
All right.
No thumb for you.
I have no mixed emotions about it.
Okay.
That's what I'm giving away. That's what Paul gives away right now.
You tell me yes or no, yay or nay, or I'm cutting your mic. I'll
tell you a thing.
Damn it. All right, Seth?
This movie gave me a fucking panic attack. No, okay. You lie. It gave me a fucking panic attack.
I was wondering, when we stepped out of the movie, Seth got up, and there's this in-credit sequence with a really great song by Sia named Waving Goodbye. I love that song. I've listened to it like 80 times since I bought it on iTunes right after watching the movie for the first time. And, I was sitting there watching it, and Dave was sort of sitting there, and Seth was between us, and he got up like he really wanted to get out of the theater straight away.
Yeah.
And you seemed kind of grim the entire time afterwards at Starbucks. I took that to think that you
hated
the movie.
Well, he had a large soda.
No, okay. Like,
and a lot of popcorn.
I got a large popcorn.
Dave's popcorn.
I always eat a large popcorn.
We heard
always.
About how Dave's popcorn was still quite a bit.
So for the first 45 minutes of the film, it's pretty slow.
Buddy.
And I was eating my popcorn, got halfway through it. And then it all starts to kick in, and I put it down, didn't touch it the rest of the time, my drink either. So I threw it all away. I walk away, the credits are playing, and I just had to fucking stop and just sit there for a second and stand against the wall and just... collect my pulse. And then we walk outside and there's a goddamn carnival going on. And I'm in the midst of a fucking Nikki Winding panic attack. This movie, I think, affected me more than any movie in recent memory.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. It fucked me up. I don't know why, but it fucked me up.
I can't wait. This is good.
I love that. I love movies that can do that to you.
I think we were talking last week, I don't know if it was on the show, that my favorite film of the past 5 years is probably Drive.
Sure.
I think this is my new one.
Really?
Yeah.
I know for a fact that it's my favorite movie so far this year.
Yeah.
I don't know how it tracks with everything.
It's definitely
else,
the best one that I've seen thus far.
Good God.
Yeah, I don't think Independence Day 4 is going to top it.
I've not Central seen Intelligence. It.
I don't want to pass judgment.
I'm holding out.
But Ghostbusters is also coming out, so. But I've never had a panic attack from a fucking movie. Ever.
I didn't know you were going through that. I just thought you were pissed off.
No, I was having a fucking panic attack.
Like, I can't believe I dropped $10 to watch this piece of shit.
No, I just,
Me, when I walked out watching it the first time, I caught it this past weekend on a Sunday.
Kind of getting, tingy thinking about it again.
Really?
It's a
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was.
To me, it's
the popcorn.
Punch in the gut of a movie. And, you know, after I walked away the first time, I don't know if I was aware of some of the reviews that called the movie, like, reviewers trying to be oh so clever, saying it was just as beautiful and vapid as all of its characters, right?
Yeah.
And so after I walked out the first time, and I was like, you know,
I wrote that review.
We can go now. We've said all that needs to be said.
I don't know that there are a whole lot of layers to the movie. I don't know that there is any sort of great symbolism. I think there is some, and I think that is interesting on a couple of levels, but more than anything, I love that it was just a punch in the gut to me. I love the experience of having watched the movie.
The only thing negative, I don't care if it's negative, it doesn't really matter. It's real, I guess, influencer, but I don't know. It's very much Black Swan a lot. There's a lot of similarities between the two about beauty and shit like that and being good enough and people getting mad because you're better than them or whatever. I mean, it even ends with a girl being stabbed in the stomach.
We should go ahead and say at this point, even though it is a new movie, we are going to be getting into spoilers.
Because you're not
going to
see it because it's gone now.
Yeah. Yeah. It earned a
Unless
solid...
Unless you live in Chi-Town or L.A., you're not going to see it.
It earned a solid $12 per theater this week.
Probably.
It got trounced by Finding Dory again, and God knows whatever else is out there. So
Turtles.
Even though it was released fairly wide, it's, as I understand it, it's being pulled from a lot of theaters this week. So definitely catch it out.
It's a shame.
iTunes or
Amazon.
Amazon Prime. Probably. But Amazon produced
it.
Or distributed it.
It was really
anyway.
Weird to see that vanity card of like, I was like, what is Amazon? What the fuck?
I heard you whisper to Dave as soon as it came up. You're like, they don't make movies.
Yes. They sell me cheap movies. Which means this movie's not going to be any cheaper on Amazon than anywhere else. They're going to want all $30 for that Blu-ray.
Totally. Oh, they're not cutting anybody a break. Yeah, so the spoiler will, or rather, this talk will be rather spoilery. But before we dive into it, let's go ahead and talk a bit about what the movie is about.
What it's about or what the plot is?
Well, rather, what the basic plot is.
There are different things right now in my head.
The movie opens with a young girl. She's 16, named Jessie. She's shown up in L.A. to get some photographs done. She winds up getting picked up by an agency, and all of a sudden she is kind of the new it girl in the fashion world. She is coveted by everybody. She is, she is sort of desired in a way, I think, by everybody, too, that she sort of comes into contact with. And for better or worse, as it goes, plot-wise, I almost don't want to get spoilery. You know, we'll just unveil that stuff bit by bit as we go. But it's pretty much, imagine A Star Is Born gone really, really wrong by the time you get to the end of it. And it's a little Black Swan-y a bit, but...
There's a bit of that in there.
Yeah, as she moves through the fashion world and as she sort of climbs the ladder, she... I don't know how to describe the plot at a certain point without.
I mean, there
it's,
is a.
It's all about Eve. Drop the mic.
There's also a lot of Sunset Boulevard in the last act of it.
Definitely with the
just the swimming pool.
The swimming pool.
It's really not Sunset Boulevard.
Well, I mean, there's the whole thing where it's like obsession leading to murder, and that's all on Sunset Boulevard.
This movie has obsession leading to murder.
Yeah, the fucking Ruby. She's obsessed with her.
Yeah.
And then they kill her.
Right.
Sunset Boulevard, Gloria Swanson's obsessed with homeboy, and shoots him.
They want to get rid of her.
Well, I think the two of them do. Because,
well, they want to devour
well,
her.
Well, the two of
yeah,
them.
Devour her power.
Gigi and Sarah, they're jealous of her. Ruby just yeah. wants her. And Ruby was okay with her until she was rejected by her.
Darn.
Yes, there are three. In a weird way, there is this. I don't know if we're meant to think that it is the neon demon of the title, but there is a turning point in the movie, and there's an image that sort of seems to be the catalyst for that, where our lead character, Jessie, who's this very sweet, very innocent young girl who's been told over and over and over again how beautiful she is and how desirable she is and how, like, all these people want to photograph her. At a certain point, she goes from being sweet and naive to absolutely, well, buying all of her own press in a way. She has a turn at the midpoint in the movie where she starts to become very vain and very narcissistic.
Yeah.
And
honestly, that's where the movie could start for me.
Really?
That, like, rebirth where she's in, like, the... Essentially,
the birth canal?
It's like a birthing canal yeah. when you have that, like,
made up
red
of the
triangles. She,
yeah.
like,
the triangle.
Kisses the mirror and accepts herself as this yeah. new, like, beautiful, if you want to call her the demon of the movie or whatever.
I could
first,
see, like,
the
you?
First 30 minutes, I didn't like it.
It was slow. It was a slow burn building.
It was artistic, but
yeah,
it looked beautiful.
If you don't have all that opening stuff, I don't think I would. And you might all think I'm crazy for this, but I think the movie's a tragedy. And by the end of it, I felt so bad for her. Not just because of what happens to her, but the fact where she wound up even before she was ultimately, spoiler alert, was murdered. And I don't think I would have given a damn had we not had those first 30 or 40 minutes with her.
Right. I think about the movie for me is that, yeah, I felt bad for her, kind of. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that Jessie is the one that gets killed. It could have been anybody, because the movie continues for half hour after she's dead. Because it's not about her. It could have been any girl that they killed. That's not what it's about. It's about jealousy and what lies under you know, all of their like fake nose and their chiseled chin or whatever, because the whenever they're in the diner and Jesse's there with the guy and there's Gigi and Sarah and then the what's that guy's name, the really smart photographer guy, I don't know his name.
Jack.
Yeah. And they're talking about it and they're like, you know, beauty's the only thing, nothing matters but beauty, because it doesn't matter what's underneath. And what's underneath all these girls is really horrible, horrible things. And
that's why I feel bad for her, because that wasn't there to begin with. I think she was corrupted by...
She wasn't, but I mean, that could have been... But
oh,
that,
absolutely.
That could have been anyone. I feel bad for her, but at the end of the day, it could have been a different character. And it wouldn't have,
that couldn't have been anyone, though, because she has that, like, special something.
Right, no.
They don't
want her. I mean,
they want that power.
No, but I mean, it could have been any girl that. It didn't have to be Jessie with, like, her backstory and where she's living. Well, it could have been a different girl that just had the it thing.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I think you're right. She is absent for, like, the last section of the movie. Yeah. But I think she haunts, maybe literally, but I think she haunts every moment after that.
Yeah.
Like, she hangs over every scene. I still think it's her story even after she exits the story, which in a way is also kind of Sunset Boulevard-y.
Yeah.
Okay, so, Dave, you don't find her to be...
I find her to be an empty cipher throughout the whole movie.
You didn't like her at all?
Not at all.
Not even a bit?
Yeah, no. In the beginning, she's a doe-eyed innocent, mm-hmm. which is very stereotypical. And then she goes through the Eve Harrington transformation and becomes a mean girl when she gives that little wry smile, right? That's the moment. But she's still empty. She has no... In fact, there's the really embarrassing sequence when she says, I just want to be me. But there's no me for her to be.
Thinking away, that's kind of awful too.
Well, I think that's it. She's just empty. She's a blank slate.
Yeah, but don't you think we're meant to feel something for her?
I don't.
No. Did anyone?
I don't feel anything for anybody in that film.
I don't. I mean, I see what David's saying, and I do feel bad for her to a degree. But I think at the end of the day, I think I said this with the American Psycho film too, is that I feel bad for Patrick Bateman, but I don't feel bad for him because it's not about her. It's about that world and what that world does. So it doesn't matter. That's why I was saying it doesn't matter who the character is, because it's not about this innocent girl becoming corrupt. It's about what that world does to anyone.
You think it's about that world? I really don't. I think
I
think it's about the way women are treated in general. And what really bothered me about this movie is that there is no purchase for a female perspective. That is, at the beginning, women are shown as objects of violence and then objects of desire. And then when women enter the movie, they are just stereotypical, like they get into catfights. And they're all about beauty. So there's no, I think, reasonable place to escape that, either of those views.
But I think that's true of everybody who isn't her. Like, I think
she's the same way. Why would you eliminate her from that equation?
Because I think, sorry, go.
I think she realizes that there's, like, no beating the system. Like, you have to accept that stereotype, and then you become the power.
Because she does, right? Yeah. She says, all I have is my looks. I'm pretty.
And if that's all she has, that's what she's going to use.
But isn't that a really terrible thing to say?
It is, but I think it goes back to what he was saying is it's totally about that world. I don't think
it's about that world. I think it's about society in general.
Could be.
Sure. Yeah. No.
Because all that stuff is being manufactured for the world outside of
right.
that bubble.
But, so. Right. I mean, the fantastic thing about Eve Harrington is she's smart. Here, this girl is smart. Jesse.
We don't know a ton about her. We know that she's 16 and that she's in L.A. She doesn't talk about her parents. She doesn't say they're dead. She says that they're not around.
Right.
We don't know what that means, or even if it's true.
She's empty.
Know?
She's a nothing.
But I think she knows she's empty because she has nothing to offer the world but her looks.
Absolutely.
So she's trying to fill it with something because she's like, well, I can't write, I can't dance, but I'm, I have looks, so I'm gonna get money with that. And try to fill it with that, and then when she fills it with that, it's horrible. It's terrible.
And
she becomes a horrible person.
Yeah.
Until she's confronted directly at the end of it, because the whole time to the end is that she becomes like caught up in herself, and she's more confident. She dumps her boyfriend, and she feels awesome. And the moment that, and then she walks into the house and the girl's there and she snarks off to her, the moment she gets hit, she becomes Jesse the doe-eyed girl. And she gets knocked out of that world. And
she snapped back to reality as
well. And then she dies.
Because when she walks into that house and sees, is it Gigi? And she says, are we having a party or something?
And then Sarah clocks her.
The way she says that, she might as well have been one of them.
Yeah, well, she was at that point. But she was actually better than them because everybody wanted her.
Sure.
And they knock her down a peg, as it were, into the pool.
She's not better than them. She is just more desirable.
No, yeah. But I mean, in the modeling world, that is better. I mean, it's not based on talent. It's based on who wants you win.
Right.
And that makes you better than everybody else.
But I wonder how much of that is her
and
innocence.
She buys into it.
And like how sweet she is to begin with. I mean, the one thing that they all have, here's the thing. When they kept going on and on about how beautiful Elle Fanning is, and she is a beautiful girl or whatever, but all of the women in the movie were stereotypically gorgeous.
Well,
I think the reason that she was so desirable is because she started out innocent and she started out sweet. I think there's a line that Christina Hendricks, as the head of the modeling agency, she tells her that at the very beginning. You have that deer caught in the headlights look. They love that, you know?
Yeah.
And the moment that she no longer has that, she's discarded. She's, yeah, well.
Well, it's because, I mean, because every girl in this film, I feel like, started out like her. Because the modeling agency woman mentions, I've seen 100 girls every day come in here that have, what you have, but not quite the level you have. So I think that every girl started there. Just some of them, and then eventually they get surgery done. Their noses are fake. Their boobs are fake. Their cheeks are fake. Their neck's fake. Everything's fake about them. So she's still real. But then she starts to buy into it. And what would she have done if she hadn't died? I think that she would have went on to become just one of them.
Sure. Give it 10 years, expiration date is up, as they put it. And
yeah, well, more like 4 years.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
God, what a horrific. That alone is a horror movie, I think, just that world. But, and I do feel really bad for her. And I don't know that I did necessarily after the first viewing, because there was a line that she says fairly early on after she's left alone with Jack the photographer, and he tells her to take her clothes off, and you know, it's such a creepy sequence. But right after, Ruby tells her not to stay alone with that guy, you know, not to be alone around him, not to really trust him or whatever. And her eyes sort of level, and she says, "I'm not as helpless as you think." And so at that point, I was wondering, again, on first viewing, watching that, if she is a bit more manipulative than she's letting on, if she does have more control,
that's what I thought the entire time.
And then
eventually she did become that.
Well, but there is, for all of that she says, for all of those moments that she has where she sort of asserts herself or acts more confident, and it certainly grows and grows and grows as the movie goes on, she is still the same girl who at the very beginning of the movie, when she was asked if she sleeps with men, she's like, "Oh yeah, all the time."
It sounds like
she's
a liar. Yeah.
She's a child who is lying to seem more grown up, more adult, and more. And so watching it on the second time and seeing that line performed again, it made me realize that no, she's, even when she appears to be more confident, she appears to be more manipulative, she's just putting on a show. She's trying her best to fit in into that world.
Yeah.
And that's, and that makes me feel even worse.
Well, I think what unnerved me most about the film is it's just so cold. Like there's no heart. And I don't think it needs it, but it's just cold, and it left me just feeling kind of horrible about every person I was around. Because they're all so shitty. And Ruby seems to react after they kill her, because she's like cleaning up the blood, then she's laying in the grave with presumably what's left of her body, like making out with the body or just laying in the grave with her or whatever. So Ruby's affected in a weird, like, sexual way. Gigi ends up vomiting out her eye because they were eating her, which is fucked up. But Sarah has no effect. Sarah's the girl who tried to drink her blood earlier in the film.
Well, she does. You know, that's why I wonder if Jesse, in a way, doesn't haunt the movie after she dies, because they kill her in the pool. They have knives. God knows what happens in
that
pool.
Sarah says, "I ate her."
They
And you think it's a joke until they vomit up the eyeball. You're like, "Oh, God, they ate her."
You don't think it's a joke.
You know.
Is she just being mean to that girl? No. And then it cuts back to the other girl, and she has this look of just distress, like, she just confessed. She confessed. It's like, holy fuck. These are horrible people.
They cut her up. They ate her. They bathed in her blood. Not unlike Elizabeth Bathory, which for at least Sarah seems to work. You know, she was more desirable in that final scene when Jack decides to replace the model that he
fires
had initially
Annie
with her. So,
fire me.
You know, after they kill her, though,
I have a contract.
We have Ruby, who was, I think, I wouldn't say she was in love
with her.
She was in love.
Ruby was obsessed with her.
She was obsessed. She was definitely lusting after her. The effect after that is that after she eats her and the other two models have left, after she waters the garden, hoses away the blood, hangs out at what we assume is Jesse's grave, she goes inside under the big bright moon that Jesse talked about having watched as a child.
Yep.
You know, the big eye in the sky. And under that eye, she lays down on the ground and just bleeds out.
I don't know. Did she stab herself? What the fuck?
No,
what
I don't know. She had no implements in her hand.
What the fuck was that then?
Well, here's the thing.
The fuck was it?
She hemorrhages. She hemorrhages.
Does
then,
she?
The next...
Was it real?
Oh my God.
No, I totally think it was.
Really?
And then we go to.
I wonder what that is.
The photo shoot.
A woman bleeding. Can't imagine.
It was a wave, Dave.
Think about it. It's obviously a minstrel thing. I get that. But I mean, are we meant to? I guess it doesn't fucking matter.
That wasn't a minstrel thing. Sorry.
No.
That's not how that works. No.
In a way, I think it was because Ruby tries to have sex with Jesse, and Jesse says, you know, I've never done this before, and Ruby mentions it, you know, the first time or whatever. And then after she then has sex with a corpse in her other job, and then,
which can we go ahead and say for a second, what the fuck? I mean,
right?
I get it.
That
you
was
guys
just,
weren't into
damn
that?
It.
That was that was a bit and wasn't even like the
Did
like,
you say a bit? Did was, you say
well,
a bit disturbing?
No, it wasn't even like the stitched boobs and the fingering. It was the weird
spitting into the mouth
and the tongue in and out thing. That was
okay.
But
that was not a you. I swear, no matter how good practical effects can be, you can always tell the difference between like a dead rubbery body on a table playing a corpse and an actual person. That was an actual person, and they were a fucking trooper.
Well, but the thing about it is that Ruby, it's like it's like she goes through all that and then she kills her. And I was wondering if Ruby must have been wanting to do something like this for a long time.
I wonder if she hadn't done it several times because she's laying on a grave with flowers, just having been planted there. Right?
But see,
she is in an entire fucking garden, though.
Right, but I mean, is it meant to be that she's done it before, or because the last scene we see her in, whenever she presumably menstruates or whatever that means,
I don't,
that it's puberty and she's come of age now.
See, I thought that was like
she's a woman now.
Symbolically, like Jesse's blood, like they each have their own reaction to Jesse's blood. So one throws it up, one wants it again, and then she's just like content. Like
I went puberty sexual with it.
The look in her eyes,
but that's totally what
bathing
I took from
in that like
I
love
of sexual.
What she did to Jesse.
It could be.
I did.
Thought it was totally Jesse, and I don't think it has to be this, but I think it can be Jesse exacting some sort of revenge in a way, like. Having, you know, if it were Jesse's blood, you know, as she was bleeding out, if it is her inside of Gigi, you know, distressing her to the point where she has to cut herself out. I mean, the flip side of that could simply be that Gigi is talking about guilt. I need to get her out of me or whatever.
Yeah.
But even with Sarah, I mean, you say she has no reaction, and she definitely has less of a reaction than everybody else. But she – there's that great lip twitch, though. But she is crying when she takes that regurgitated eyeball and swallows it and walks away. And it's worth noting that Ruby died long before Gigi.
She eats the eyeball.
She did. She did. Well, there was no she swallowed.
She put it in her mouth. And I took that to be she's a cold bitch that's covering it up. Because if they walk in and find that girl dead.
No, she didn't want to waste any.
With an eyeball.
She got the job. She needed more.
Yeah, she needed more.
I think she might still die. I think there's a chance.
So many layers here.
Their reactions to Jesse's death were their reactions to their initial meeting, which was Ruby is in love with her and she's bathing in it and she wants to like just she loves her. And then who's the one that's not Sarah?
Gigi.
She's obsessed with herself and she's a fraudulent, you know, even from her.
Gigi liked her until she made fun of Gigi's plastic surgery.
Right. And then you have Sarah, who from the beginning
is
sizing her up and she's, you know, she wants her power.
And she takes it by the end. But I wonder if, you know, because there is such a time difference between Ruby and Gigi having died, I don't know that we're meant to think that Sarah is completely safe, as it were.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think it has to be that. I think it's a fun thing to think about.
Yeah,
I don't think the movie cares, but
whether she's crying or not, I think that she wins at the end because, and she doesn't, I don't think she feels that much remorse. Maybe she does, but I didn't get that she did.
I think if she was crying, it was either for Gigi or for herself. It certainly wasn't for Jesse.
Unless it was happiness. People cry because of happiness all the time.
True.
And she seemed happy as shit to get that modeling job at the end of it.
She did, although when she is sitting on the couch and she is talking about having eaten Jesse, she seems like drained.
Broken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I got to imagine guilt factors into
it. To sacrifice for the work.
And it is weird that, you know, there are three women who all desire her in some way for their own reasons and who are threats to her. And much in the same way, I think there are three men. And I wonder if that, and this might be just me reaching or whatever, but I find it strange that the neon demon, I think we're meant to think that the triangle symbol is meant to be that. But the triangle is made up of three smaller triangles. And
there are three girls.
Like there are three girls. There are three guys.
Yep.
Who pose threats to her as well. And I'm wondering.
And I'm just going to say, how many witches are in Macbeth? It's almost like.
I bet he borrowed from that.
I'm just saying. just going to say.
No, but I.
Nikki
Wingding.
Nikki Wingding.
Just on a technical level to talk about it for a second, much like Drive and Only
God
Forgives.
It's a beautiful movie.
It's gorgeous.
That scene of her her closing out the show where she transforms and, like, she's lit all in blue. Then she looks back and it's all red and she sees herself making out with her with like the reflection of her and like mirrors play a huge part in the entire film.
There are mirrors all over the place.
Which it's all just vanity. But and then she's literally physically making out with herself and it's like, God, that's one, it's beautiful, it's weird, and it's kinda sad and tragic, but it's real fucking weird. But it's really well done. I really enjoyed the way it looked.
Oh, it's and the score.
So
too,
you saw that her kissing herself as just the vanity?
She's finally accepted and became that. Yeah. Because I mean, she goes from being lit in like passive blue mm-hmm. and aggressive red, and she's looking at herself the whole time. And it's like two different sides of her.
I think she's finally seeing her like true self. Yeah.
And then she becomes that.
I think the moment that she changes or whatever that is her true self, but having witnessed that happening to her, I don't think that's always who she was. Or at least I hope it isn't.
I hope that person
wasn't always.
She had to be birthed into that. That's what that like.
Right. But I mean, I think that's the part that makes me feel so weird with the film is that if it is her true self and Jesse was that person anyway, because we don't know who she was back home in Georgia. She may have been a complete bitch.
She does have that line when she is monologuing at the pool, standing over top Ruby like she's on
my mother told me I was dangerous.
Yeah, I'm a dangerous girl.
Yeah, it's like I think she was always a little bit that way. It was a small town in Georgia, and there wasn't much to do besides be a bitch at like a football ball game. Then she goes to L.A. and discovers that
taking it personal.
This all pays off. I can be fully this and get money out of it.
It's so hard to reconcile that though with.
That's why it gave me a fucking panic attack. Because it was just cold and heartless, which is fine. I don't know why I liked it as much as it did because I'm not one to like those kind of really cold, heartless films because they make me feel weird afterwards, but I really enjoyed it.
There was like that lone bright spot in the movie. I mean, the potential like sort of burgeoning romance between her and the guy who initially shoots her. And I've forgotten his name.
I don't know his name.
Yeah. He was
that guy.
That guy.
Trans Am.
Which is
Firebird.
Firebird.
Who drives a fucking 80s Firebird in Los Angeles? Nobody.
Burt Reynolds.
That guy.
That's not fair.
Amateur photographers.
Sure. That's fair.
But no, it was oddly sweet in a way, even though it was kind of weird because we get the feeling that he's an older dude. And the moment that he hears that she's just turned 16, he kind of like shies away. And then he doesn't shy away. But
right.
I think in a way, up until a point, we're to think that he's the only guy who actually values her outside of her beauty until he's confronted with that and told that he's essentially a hypocrite because, you know, he wouldn't know her to begin with.
If she wasn't
pretty, beautiful. Yeah. And that's the point when she turns away, she sort of spurns him and sends him packing. We never see him again.
Yeah.
Well, but that was sort of the bit of warmth in the movie was.
Right. But it's, I mean, at that point, she's already turned.
Yeah.
And I mean, that turn was starting whenever she cut her hand on the glass after she got the modeling job instead of Sarah. And Sarah's in the bathroom and she's like bashed the mirror up. And then she cuts her hand. When she goes home that night and passes out, there's a flash of the triangles when she's asleep, and then she wakes up.
She has two of those sort of visions.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
Well, she always talks.
I don't know.
I just think about the movie is I don't know because I mean the thing about it is that she mentions to the guy that like she used to like dream about her life and what her life could be,
mm-hmm.
and the movie the only dreams that we see are leading up to these horrible horrible things because I think she wants it in a way. Which is really just makes me feel weird. Makes me feel weird.
And then we also have, in addition to all of the other characters, there's this real son of a bitch of a character played Keanu Reeves by Keanu Reeves.
Fucking teenagers are all the fucking same.
Playing a motel manager. He's in three scenes and he makes an impact every time.
Yeah, because he rapes a 13-year-old girl in one of them.
Or
kills her. I don't know.
He does?
Maybe he does. Okay. We never see him.
Okay,
yeah.
So
could be Mikey.
Listen.
That's her rape fantasy.
You don't think he was actually in that room?
That's her rape fantasy.
No, because she
there
was,
has
because
to be some sort
was,
of reason for that being a dream sequence because that's the only
that
thing that
dream,
sort of sticks out.
She had that dream, and then Keanu was putting the knife in her
Nikki
mouth.
Wing Ding has a lot of fetishes.
Well, right, but I mean,
lots.
I mean,
of them.
Keanu put the knife in her mouth, and she wakes up, and that was a dream. And then Keanu comes to the door. We assume it's him, and then he goes next door to we assume to be 214. Where the other little girl was, and
right.
we hear it.
The real Lolita.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that's why she leaves.
Yeah.
Without calling the fucking police.
Yeah. She lost me there more than just acting kind of, you know, cold to everybody else.
She's a vain, cold, calculated kind of a bitch.
Yeah, by that point when she saved herself and didn't bother to call the cops and stop what was happening.
In case you thought it was going to be like a feminist film where she like realizes her power, like no.
Nope.
She's a cold bitch.
Yep.
Yeah, she is. She's a model.
But I wonder what the point of that dream sequence was
carved ice,
in relation
marble.
To, well, the rest of the movie. Because it does seem, I can't think of any other dream sequence in the movie.
The triangle.
Even
was
those,
the...
well, that doesn't, I guess, feed into her transformation. I'm wondering what that moment is meant to be. It's almost more a bit of plot, like a catalyst for her to get out of the motel and go stay at Ruby's. But
right.
it feels like it should mean something more than that.
Maybe she's just having premonitions. Because the only two that we get eventually lead to a similar act. Because she dreams about him doing that to her, and then she wakes up and the door is being jiggled, assuming he was going to come in and hurt her.
Door that was hard to open to begin with, then got kicked in, and then was repaired and was still hard to open.
Yeah, it's wiggly. It's a wobbly place.
$100
Yeah.
A long way.
$140
Maybe $200 But he only needed $100 for the
fucking
door.
Teenagers are all the fucking same. And the other dream we get is the flash of the triangles, which then leads us into her transforming again. I don't think it's supernatural. I think they're just done as just a film trick to lead the audience that way. I don't think she's actually seeing the future. That'd be silly. Maybe? I don't really know. I don't know.
Maybe, but I think she is seeing something. But I mean, I wonder if we're to take then there's something. If it's not supernatural, and I don't think it has to be, but if it's not, then maybe there's something wrong with her.
Well, and maybe that's the thing, is that maybe there is a bit of supernatural-ish thing. I don't know if it's physically there. Maybe it's meant to be symbolic in a way of doing that, because at that point, she's the It Girl. So she seems to have this otherworldly power to get what she wants. And after they kill her and presumably eat her, Sarah, at the end of it, is able to look at Jack and almost hypnotize him in a way by forcing him to come over to her and recognize her. So maybe there's a bit of, like, trading powers. I don't know.
Maybe it is sort of that virgin thing.
I don't know
because,
what it means.
Like, the phallus of, like, the knife going into her mouth. Like, so she still remains, even though she's become this demon, like, she's still pure and has this it factor. So once Sarah consumes it, she can, like, get Jack to notice her.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I wonder, though.
Spout off bullshit here.
No. It's
all fair game.
That's what the show is about.
Absolutely. In that case, then, I wonder who, to me, like, when I heard the title and after I watched the movie for the first time, I assumed the Neon Demon wasn't an actual person. It was just that world that ultimately corrupted her. But I've read since then that, you know, some people think that it's either an actual thing. Maybe it is supernatural. Some people think that it is meant to refer to Jesse herself. And what does the Neon Demon mean to each of you? Like, what does the title represent ultimately?
I don't think it's an actual thing. I think it's just a way to describe what she becomes. Is that she becomes the Neon Demon because, I mean, models are lit with all these bright lights and they're neon
something
lights.
Something shiny and glowing.
Yeah, and they're demons because they're all horrible, horrible people. at least what we're shown in the film.
In the world of the movie, yeah.
Which I'm sure is probably not very far off from actual models. I don't know any. If you're a model, let me know if you're a bitch. But,
And thank you for listening. Comment. Please chime in.
Yeah.
I just want to say I love Chrissy Teigen. She's super cool.
The fuck is Chrissy Teigen?
A model.
But I don't think it refers to any kind of, like, overwhelming force. I think it's just a clever name for what she becomes. But I don't know, I could be wrong. I've been wrong all the time.
Hunter? Dave?
You're right.
Yeah. Just let you have this one.
I think the Neon Demon are the three triangles because they're kind of neon-y. And that's it. I don't think there's any reason to call it
Illuminati?
That. I'm not
is
sure.
Is that where this
really,
is going?
I don't think there's any reason.
They have kind of horns.
For connections.
Mm-hmm. Triangles have sharp edges.
You got
those
it.
Are like horns.
That's what I'm going with.
You know, I did notice on second viewing it was a lot of fun to see, like, some of the foreshadowing, like, leading up to what we know is coming.
Well,
on second viewing, what you know is coming.
Do you feel like that felt forced?
Not the first time, because I didn't notice it.
Well,
I thought this wanted to be art so badly, and it stuck with me. But
it opens on Jesse being dead or looking dead.
Yeah.
And then Ruby's one
body
of the
placed
and,
exactly yeah. like it is when she actually dies.
And then Ruby is the one that's wiping off all the blood, which is the one that
cleaning it away.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we have that conversation in the bathroom when Jesse meets Gigi and Sarah for the first time. And they're talking about how lipsticks are named either after food or sex. And Ruby ultimately asks Jesse, so are you food or are you sex?
And she doesn't know.
And by the end of it, it's like, well, Ruby wanted her for sex. And when she's spurned, then Jesse becomes
food.
Yeah.
But I think that Jesse didn't have an answer because, like David said, she's empty. She doesn't know anything, which is why she doesn't know an answer to it, if you're food or sex, because she's empty. But I thought that is interesting that she Ruby wanted her for sex and then Sarah wanted her for food, and Gigi was just along for the ride.
Just wants to be her
because Gigi's is a spurnful bitch. I did not see the end of Gigi puking up an eyeball. I kind of started to feel bad because like she's like trying to like vomit. Then she goes into the room and is vomiting. And my thought process was, well, of course she can't vomit. She's a model. They don't eat anything. That's really sad. It's just dry heaving.
The first time I saw it, I couldn't tell if she was trying to vomit or give birth.
Well, I thought both. It was going to be like Ruby,
yeah.
Where
I'm pretty sure it's both. And then Sarah eats the baby.
Oh.
What? We're down this road. You drove me here, Nikki Wingding. Let me question existence for a bit.
Okay.
And the nature of people. Jesus.
And then we have the
I just don't see it.
We have the big wild cat in her motel room too.
The cougar.
The cougar. Which we see later a big wild cat in Ruby's house, and I wonder if that's
and there's
supposed
a wolf
to be
in there too.
Sort of.
There was a wolf in the house. There was a wolf in the house too.
Was there?
Yeah, the wolf eating the grandma. It's all there.
The wolf eating
Little Red Riding Hood. Ruby had red
hair. So you
think
there's fairy tale imagery in the movie?
Ruby had red hair.
Were we supposed to make that connection ourselves?
Her name is Ruby.
Gigi and Sarah are meant to be like wicked step sisters.
Sure. Macbeth witches. I just don't. I'm trying to make sense because when a movie makes me feel this way, I feel
Jesse
like
gets eaten.
I feel like there has to be something there that's made me feel that way.
Is Ruby a witch?
Yeah.
How does it make?
Is Keanu Reeves the big bad wolf?
It makes me just feel unnerved and just not good about life.
Why?
Because it's so cold and there's no hope in it and it's just tragic, and I just feel awful. I don't feel bad for the misser. I just feel awful afterwards.
I think it would be tragic if they were fully realized people, but I don't think any of them really are. So I don't
what's the thing is that
I don't think it would work if they were all three-dimensional.
Right. Well, the thing is I don't feel awful for them. I don't feel bad for Jesse and Ty. I don't feel bad for Ruby. I just personally feel awful after, like, it was just a drain. It just emotionally drained me. I don't know why that is. It gave me a fucking panic attack.
I had no emotional investment in anybody.
Well, I don't know if I did either, but it's why I can't figure out why it affected me the way it did.
It's interesting.
But I wonder if you have to have an emotional connection to characters. And like I said, I did like Jesse, but I mean, so far as like your response to it, I wonder if we always have to have an emotional investment in a movie to be affected in such a way. I mean, you know, typically when we bring movies in here to talk about, we try and peel back the layers. We try and look to see if there's any depth or if there's no depth.
Yeah. But
I was thinking about this, and I'm trying to liken it to music, whether or not, you know, there are great songs that have lyrics that might work on several layers that mean something. But then, you know, there's also music out there that's merely instrumental, and it hits you in the gut, and you don't know why. And to me, the Neon Demon is that kind of work. Yeah, I don't think there's a great deal of depth. I don't think the characters are necessarily three-dimensional. But damn it, there's something in that movie that twice now has fucked me up. And that doesn't happen often with movies.
I just want to know why Wingding is so concerned with telling us how shitty everybody in Los Angeles is. Because I've only seen Drive in this, and he apparently hates everybody in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Because they're both about shitty people in Los Angeles.
I mean, there were a couple of decent human beings in Drive.
There were more than this. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of shitty people in Drive.
Yeah, L.A. is not. I think he's terrified of the place. That's what I'm getting from it.
Where is he from?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought you would know.
I will look it up.
David,
I'm not a huge Wingding fan.
I care.
Because he seems to hate Los Angeles quite a bit.
Well, his next movie was Only God Forgives, and it's a pretty miserable movie too. And it's set in Thailand, I believe.
Also, the one thing I noticed, and I think maybe the movie affected me because I was bringing in my own things into my head. But
I think you'd have to.
But whenever she's explaining to the guy about her dreams and like they're overlooking L.A. or whatever, one, L.A.'s a bit too clear. There's way more smog there. But
no,
there isn't now.
It's clean now.
Is it?
It is.
He's from Copenhagen, Denmark.
I thought you were going to say it was. There was too much smog.
No, well, the last time I was there was 3 years ago.
Oh, it's clean.
So.
It's clean.
But I was watching it. And the one thing that I never noticed about L.A. I don't think this really has anything to do with the film or what I was trying to say, but it made me really sad. You can't see any stars in Los Angeles.
No.
And I had never.
Except on Hollywood Boulevard.
Right, because I mean, in that shot, there's the moon. There are no stars.
Ball.
All the stars are the city.
Yeah.
But they're all fake. And that's really sad.
You are so reading.
And that's really sad. It just made me
sad. I love that he forces symbolism in this entire movie. And you're like, but the stars.
Well, the thing about it is, I think that's with any art. I mean, people can create art to say, well, I want this to be as a symbol. I don't fucking care what a director or a writer wants in it. What you show me is what I'm going to take from it, add my own thing into it, and get out of it what I want.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I think this film, I think, more than any other film I've seen in recent years,
it's a great vessel to
has reminded me of that. Because I don't think Winding really had as much to say as I'm saying he's saying, but I don't care. Because what I brought to it and got out of it is, which maybe that's why he did make everything so blank. I don't, maybe he didn't. But I'm just bringing my own thing to it, which I think is what you have to do with art anyway. I think it's why I liked it as much. It was just really,
I mean, I have
really
to imagine,
sad art for me.
I have to imagine it means something to him.
I'm sure it does.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that
is the same thing. Yeah. Right. No, yeah, and I don't think it is. I think he would have a lot more probably artsy European ways of saying things that I didn't say. But, I mean, I don't give a shit what the film is about or what they're saying, because I'm not going to draw the same thing that you would draw or that David would draw or anybody else would draw.
I'm anybody else?
Hunter.
Okay.
DJ.
I'm sorry, DJ. Deej. The Deej. DWJ.
It is funny. It's worth noting, too, because, my God, for a movie about the perils of vanity, the fucking movie opens with the title The Neon Demon, and then it's stamped with his initials underneath.
Yeah, he watermarked it.
When I saw that, I rolled my eyes so hard, I actually hurt myself a little bit. But then it kind of makes sense.
It makes sense,
by the
because,
end of
I mean, he's never, as private. I mean, I've only seen Drive by him, but he didn't do it on Drive. So I can only imagine that either one, it's because he produced it himself. And
he hasn't done it on
everyone
any other
know.
Movie.
But I think there is a bit of that of, well, and also it looks like a cologne logo.
Oh, totally.
Or like a clothing logo.
As glitter is cascading down around it, the music.
I think he knows that.
Sure,
and I
think he's kind of an asshole, but I like him for it.
Right, and I think
I've seen interviews with him. I'm like, I don't think I would get along with this guy, but I'm glad he exists.
He's making the Incal, so he says.
Really? Is he?
Yeah, he's been planning to do the Incal with Ryan Gosling for the past 5 years.
Dave, have you liked any of his movies?
You know, I really liked Drive because when I saw it, it seemed to be homage done correctly. As opposed to, say, Tarantino.
Easy. Easy.
You mean ripoff?
Exactly.
Easy.
You mean remaking a film with American actors instead?
Yeah.
Stab you all.
Yeah, well, he's a fine filmmaker if you want to watch the same thing over and over again.
He really does the same thing. Mm-hmm. He really works through his own
fucking ballpark.
I'm going to call it fetishes. I don't know what else to call him.
Are we talking Tarantino or Refn?
No, Refn.
Okay.
Yeah. When
he's done the Pusher trilogy, which I have not seen. He did Bronson, which I have and didn't really care for, even though I thought Tom Hardy was very good.
I saw Tom Hardy's dick. That's what I was saying.
He did
quite
Drive.
Quite unimpressive, Tom Hardy, if you're listening. Your dick is not impressive.
He's one of the four listeners we have.
That'd be amazing.
Tom! He is pissed. We lost him. Yeah, I hope you know.
Fuck this!
Welcome, Buddy and Glenn.
Just punch somebody. Yeah. Yeah, but then he did Drive, which I liked a lot. He did Only God Forgives, which
I wanted to see that really bad.
It's very,
I think uneven.
The reaction I had to it, I think, is the same reaction that Dave had to The Neon Demon. Like, it meant nothing to me. It's very pretty and very empty.
Well, see,
you know what he likes to do in that movie? Use the color red.
He does.
Could you believe that?
He does.
He uses red a lot.
He loves red. And I think that's why, I mean, just from seeing these two films,
yeah,
and judging him based on these two films alone, I really like him a lot. And I don't know if it's because, and maybe it's because he's not, I mean, maybe he is hitting us over the head with symbols, but they don't come through for me. It's his films are so sparse that you can bring anything you want to them. And Drive is a very sparse film. I mean, the main guy doesn't even have a name, and all we know is he has some moral code, and that's it. So we bring everything to it. I think, in judging by this film and that film alone, you know, those two, that I maybe respect is too strong of a word, but I respect him for giving an audience a film that doesn't tell you anything and forcing you to bring your own thing into it. And I enjoy that.
And stylistically too, I think he absolutely has his own
the
voice.
Style is great. I love the style. I'm a style guy.
What other movie could you watch?
I'm a style guy.
I like colors and techno music.
There you go.
What can I say? I'm a drug addict.
I think you've just summed up his movies.
Yeah, they are.
Wow.
Yeah.
What other movie could you see in multiplexes right now that are like the neon demon.
None.
You know? And that's what I love about it. I love that, you know, we have sort of the big blockbuster movies, but for whatever reason, God bless you, Amazon, for your first time out distributing a flick, you decided to, you failed miserably, but
David should have known.
But damn it, you put out a movie that I think was really interesting, and it's unlike anything else I would have seen. Even if I would have hated the movie,
right.
I didn't. I love the movie, but even if I would have hated it, I respect it.
Well, and I think it's that's why, like, with these two films, like, I've come to enjoy his style a lot, because he does something that's sounds really dumb, but he makes films that seem like unlike anything else without doing anything, except making them look cool.
That could be the best summation.
Nicky Winding. And I love that, because then it forces me to bring everything else of me into it. So as opposed to having a movie like the Transformers films, or I'm going way over there, but like, they hit you over the head with everything. There's no way to bring you and be a part of the film, where his films are so sparse and barren or plain or general, whatever. It forces you to bring yourself into it, and I really enjoy that.
And I think that's interesting too. Where
it's probably like, gave me a panic attack.
I have to give so much.
I'm afraid of Americans.
Yeah, I got to imagine there are filmmakers who make things that are meant to be. I mean, everything is surface. Let's say the Transformers films.
Right.
What you see is what you get. But there are movies, too, where I think the filmmakers would probably tell you, you know, well, what did you see? Oh, you saw that? No, it actually meant this.
Quentin Tarantino.
Maybe.
So and, Kevin Smith.
You know, very possibly. Assholes. But it's like, no, it's only this. It's only this or whatever. I think Refn, from what I've gotten from his films and from some of the interviews that I've read, is he would likely ask you, what do you see here?
Yeah,
and then you would answer, and he would be like, yeah, you know, that's as good as any answer.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because
in his mind, I don't think he cares what anybody gets from his film. It's about what he gets from it himself. That's
fine. But we're invited to the party.
Yeah, and then if you get something out of it, cool. If not, he doesn't give a shit. It's fine. you bring your own self or you don't. But, I mean, I do think that Neon Demon is about things. I think, really, well, it's about one thing. I mean, I think, in general, it's just about vanity.
Sure.
I think it's the overwhelming theme of the whole film.
That just seems so cliche, right?
Right, it's what I'm saying.
I love All About Eve. It does not make me feel like the Neon Demon. I can't think of another movie tackling that theme that makes me feel as bad as I should confronting those things.
I think it says things about it. I don't think this movie says anything.
Black Swan's the only film I think about vanity that affected me like this. But, I mean, that one was kind of a reversal of this, because this one was about the young girl coming in and, like, doing well. And in Black Swan, the young girl's the villain. Because Mila Kunis is the girl that doesn't have to try, and she's just good at everything.
Yeah, that's why this is All About Eve.
Because it's the other way around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Eve's the young one.
Right, yeah.
And Margot Channing's is Betty Davis out.
Right, but I mean, it is vanity, and it has been done to death, but I think, that's what I was saying, that he makes a different movie without doing anything different. And I don't know, and maybe it's because, like I said, it's because I feel that with his films, I have to bring everything to him, which is kind of cool.
I think you do. I think you're right. I mean, I think you'd have to bring something to this film because it doesn't say anything new. Every character
is
empty. Every character is speaks in cliches.
I would agree with that.
I would agree with that,
but it definitely makes me feel something different than I have with any other version of the story.
I don't know why.
It hits me on an emotion. You know what? Being honest, and this is always terrifying to have to admit within these four walls and doing this podcast, but I'll admit it and be honest. I don't know why. I've watched it twice now, and I don't know why, but I can tell you for certain that this movie really fucks me up emotionally. And however many versions of this story there's been, I can guarantee you none of them have affected me in this way.
Well, and then the cool thing
about
that.
It might trade the cliches, but it was a story told in the way that finally affected me in the way that I feel a story about that world should.
Well, I think the cool thing about that is that it is so subjective that people that enjoyed it and people that don't, we get to be on a hipster level. We can just say, you didn't get it, David. And I think Refn would probably be like, that's fine. But it's fine.
Somewhere in the background, you would just be that. Like, ha!
Yeah. This guy gets it.
Funny thing, we started out the podcast talking about comic books. I just read somewhere that apparently Refn is interested in doing a Batgirl movie.
Yeah, he wants to do one real bad. That would be fucking awesome.
I would watch the hell out of that.
It would, if nothing else, it would look amazing. Yeah, right. If nothing else,
it would be the best looking DC movie.
There would be
movie.
Motorcycle, like, tail lights streaming all over that screen.
Elle Fanning is a bad sport.
Like a live action Akira. I'd watch the shit out of that movie.
Akira, very red.
Yeah.
DC, you're fucking up so much.
Akira,
make this
Batgirl
happen. What do you have to lose?
Yeah.
I would watch
He's that. Also making the Inco.
Which is the, is that the Yodorowsky?
I'm totally worried.
That'd be interesting.
I don't know. Well, after seeing, because I saw Drive and I was like, okay, this movie's really cool. This movie's great. I thought the aesthetic of it was just because it was, I mean, there was like 80s style music, 80s style clothes. Like, okay, that's just the way this movie looks.
Neon pink lettering Neon Demon, the opening credits.
And that's in Neon Demon. I'm like, this is the exact same looking movie. It's the same look.
Only God Forgives counts.
Right. I only saw the trailer, but it looks like this. So him doing the incal doesn't look like that at all.
Well, he also did the Pusher movies, which now. I haven't seen, but I've seen footage from, and he also did
I'll probably
Bronson,
love it.
And those are, I think he's capable of doing very different things. I think he's done very different things.
Yeah, I kind of think he's not. I am bad-mouthing this guy, right, Nikki Wingding? But I think after seeing this movie, I'm kind of reassessing my appreciation of Drive, because I think I'm having the reaction that you have to this movie, where I think I'm bringing a lot more to Drive than is in the movie.
Oh, you totally are. You totally
because
are.
Because I'm bringing that nostalgia for 70s drivers.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's what it is.
Does that make you like the movie less, though?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just realizing, I think, that might be going on. It's that part of that was that nostalgia trip.
Right. Well, and I think it's his thing. I think his films are, there are other films that do this, but judging from what I've seen, it's kind of like looking at like an abstract painting. You don't know what it is, and it doesn't really matter what it is. It doesn't tell you what it is. You have to bring everything to it. But it looks cool.
You can feel something, and you can talk your way through it.
Everybody has something different.
I wish that were true about this movie, but it has such a very pessimistic view of women.
Yeah, it does.
That I'm very concerned about it.
But I mean, does it have a pessimistic view of all women or just those women in the film?
I don't know. I kind of think
is that the fear though
general.
That like
right. Well, I mean,
those,
is that
I mean,
the what the fear?
Right, that those like stereotypes that like beauty is the only thing. We're like, no, it's what's inside that counts. But once you accept that it's not, she becomes this powerful force.
I think she's an innocent at the very beginning of the movie, and the fact that he is treating that entire—it's not the women. I think he's treating the world that they're in as a bad thing because it's corrupted all of them. I don't think that necessarily makes honestly any of them. I mean, they've done terrible things, and they are horrible people by that point, but like we were talking about before, I don't think they necessarily started there, and as a result, I don't think that it has a pessimistic view of women. I think it has a pessimistic view of what that world does to women.
Right.
Well, I think the thing about it is that maybe.
I think Jesse unlocks all of that. I think because we see her as an innocent who has just arrived.
Not it.
Who has just arrived from Georgia, you know, we do see a woman who has yet to be tainted by any of
that. Well, I don't know. I think, David, I would be on your side for the pessimistic view of women, but he doesn't generalize it because we don't know any other woman in this film other than the people in that world. We don't see what he shows of women outside of the world because if we look at Drive...
Maybe, but I
think... But once they accept the world you created for them, they... become, I don't know, they just get so powerful.
Well,
like
I don't think they have to rise above it. I think they become evil, but in a Donald Trump kind of way.
That's what I'm saying.
Right, but that's a myth. Like, I don't know.
I like it.
I
think if we were to say that the movie has a pessimistic view of women, which I don't agree with, we would equally have to say that it has a very pessimistic view of men. There is one decent guy in the movie.
I think in here, men... you know, women are just objects for men, and even objects for men, the male viewer.
Well, I mean, isn't that what modeling is about, though?
I think arguably the men come off worse in the movie than women.
I mean, modeling is about making things look hot with girls that we can sell things to men.
And isn't he sort of exposing that by like?
I don't know if he's exposing it. I feel almost like he's reveling in it. And that's what
it's
I. That's where.
Weird.
That's where
I don't
it makes me worry.
I don't see him reveling it because the movie is just so sad and just so dark and cold and heartless that I. Because he's not celebrating it.
No, like,
he
not can't.
He's saying this is.
I don't know.
Just what it
There's
is.
There's so many male fantasies and fetishes going on in this movie.
Oh yeah.
One right
yeah.
after the other.
But they're all
and
awful.
They're all awful?
I think they're all treated as being awful in a way. I mean,
don't know if that's true.
I mean, she looks...
That's probably where we disagree.
When he pulls the curtain back on certain moments, I mean, if we only saw the sequence where she walks in and if the guy were to tell her, drop your clothes or whatever, and we immediately go into all that gorgeous flash photography and the gold on her face and the body paint, then yeah, I think he would be reveling in that sort of imagery. The fact that we get the preceding 3 minutes where it's so unbelievably creepy and awful and you see how small she feels, and the fact that he walks up and handles her like a piece of meat, I think he's absolutely saying that all of that is terrible. I don't think he's reveling or celebrating any of that at all. I think he's pulling back the curtain and saying that this, it looks great, but everything that leads up to that is quite awful.
I'm not sure about that. There's so many different kinds of objectifications of women, from violence in the beginning to bondage fantasies,
yeah,
to predation on underage girls, to
which is all shown as being fabricated to, by the men in the story,
to women on women love.
Well,
there's so every single kind of male fantasy, including a female's rape fantasy. All of these things are just laid out one right after the other with
right.
no kind of commentary.
Right, right. But what I think about them, though, is that they're not treated as being a positive thing. None of them are.
I think because it's so empty, that is your commentary. It's just that this is completely empty, all of these fetishes and fantasies. They're cold and disturbing and empty. I feel like you're supposed to feel that way. It's not like... Like, I feel like I can be a female viewer watching this. It's not like Transformers where you're panning up a girl's legs and you're like, this is not for me. I can't be a female viewer watching this. But watching Neon Demon, I don't know. I felt like it exposed the fetishes rather than reveled in them. And even reveling in them, it was very cold and disturbing. I think you're supposed to feel disturbed by it. That's
I don't
the
think
point
there's
of
ever a fist-pumping moment where you're,
no,
like,
you're like, oh,
wow,
yeah.
That is, look at that.
Getting off on this film.
I don't know. I kind of think Nikki might be. That's what I worry about.
Maybe. Maybe he's working through stuff, but I think ultimately what he created, I don't think.
I think he's getting off on the fact that he's like, this is art.
Maybe.
I see that a lot.
But I don't think he's getting off on, like,
really
these are my fetishes.
I really think he is in the back going, I am doing art. This is my art. Look at that. What do I need here? I need more red. Give me red.
More mirrors.
Why is Keanu unfortunate?
We were just like outside. We were saying, Keanu, slower. I don't rush this dialogue.
Slower.
We got to fill time.
Fucking teenagers.
All right, gang, before we are an hour and 11 minutes in, before we sign off, do we have any final thoughts to offer on this movie that we haven't so far?
Take a Klonopin with you.
I give it a thumbs up.
If you're as fragile as I am, apparently.
It's out of theaters this week.
My glass heart.
I got to imagine everywhere, but I'm buying this damn thing on Blu-ray the moment it comes out. I loved it.
I'm going to get real baked and we'll watch it, and then we'll see what I see.
Wow, I can't even imagine.
Come back in a couple months.
You're
going
to bring more things to it.
I'm going to just kill myself afterwards, probably.
We'll do Neon Demon Part 2 for the...
You'll just see the credits rolling. I'm just having both my fucking wrists are slit. I'm just standing there covered in glitter and blood.
I think, like it or not, this film is going to stay with
you. With vague realization in my eyes.
Agreed. It did with me anyway, so...
I guess even then, I mean, David, we were talking about how blank it is and you didn't get anything from it, but your reaction to it, you had an emotional reaction to it. It got a reaction from you. With your worry about what he's saying about women.
Well,
I mean, it got a reaction.
Maybe. I was just seeing it as that kind of being
trotted
across the screen.
But you said you were worried. So it got something.
Okay.
Something moving.
I'm going to give you that one.
You're thinking about it.
I mean, it did do something to you.
I guess, yeah.
So that says something for it, at least.
Sure.
Maybe.
Right.
It's pretty.
It happens.
It's a pretty,
Hunter, how about you?
It's
worried.
A pretty movie.
Oh, do you have any final thoughts past what we've already...
Just that it's going to stay with you, whether you like it or hate it. I feel like it's something you'll come back to.
I don't think David
it.
Will come back to it.
No?
I probably won't.
He will. Trust me.
He'll forget about it in an hour.
I probably.
On to the next one.
More bondage.
Independence Day 2.
All right, gang.
Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July.
Yes,
welcome,
actually, you know what?
This
is, we are going into the 4th of July weekend, so everybody have a happy and safe holidays. And as always, make certain to like, subscribe, share. Be sure to comment and yell at us on Twitter. We are at Scream Addicts. I'm at Jinx1981. Hunter, how about you? Are you on Twitter?
Yes.
Can
I don't know my handle.
You're going to boost our numbers.
I'm famous, trust me.
I believe you're
look
at
up,
Hunter_Hall.
I had two underscores.
Why the fuck are there two underscores?
One underscore was taken.
It's like Hunter.
I follow that guy too.
You couldn't go with a dash or a number?
I like the underscore aesthetic.
I like where there's a blank spot where the middle name should be. Right. Hunter Hall.
It's, oh my God, it's so
dramatic.
Winged. Right.
A little bit.
Slow it down, Hunter.
Slower.
It is a bit winged. I need seven more underscores in that handle, please.
Oh, jeez.
You're paying for that.
Hunter and a knife emoji.
_H_A.
We didn't even talk about Mikey.
We didn't.
Mikey breaks down doors.
You know what I really
bats.
Liked about this movie? Is
Mikey?
If this counts as a horror movie, we have so much hope for Ghost Dad. Let's go. Let's do it.
No. No. Come on. I was expecting something three quarters of the way out of the movie for somebody to look over and be like, why? This is not what
David said.
What's
going on? The moment it ended, he went.
Horror movie.
I want to start the hashtag Scream Daddicks to get Ghost Dad on Scream Daddicks.
Yes!
So tweet us with hashtag Scream Daddicks. Let's see if we can't watch some Bill Cosby in here.
Yes. Let's see if we can.
It probably says similar things as this film did.
Right.
Okay, I'm pressing end on that one.
I think Hunter will come back for that one if I'm not Absolutely. Mistaken.
Actually, we're hoping to have Brian back next week. But Hunter, will you come back as well?
No.
No. You have to come back next week. I'm going to be in Chi-Town. Chi-Rack.
Oh, you got to cover for
hey.
Yeah, you got to come back.
But whose pick is it?
I don't care.
It's Brian's.
I'm in Chicago.
We push Brian's a week.
It could be Hunter's pick.
Ooh,
yeah, that's true.
Guest Ghost pick.
Swerve ball.
No.
I'll just put a ghost cover.
You can't do Ghost Dad without me. You can't do Ghost Dad without me.
No.
Can't do it.
Hey, if Bill Cosby doesn't need consent, we don't need your consent.
Oh, wow.
And I'm out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is what Scream Addicts have been missing.
I know we still have to go through your Twitter handles, but I don't think there's
Now, for one day, I'm not the most offensive person on the show. That's nice. I really enjoy that.
Okay, let's wrap
get
this
so
up.
So many likes on this
David,
one.
David, you are at Zostykin.
If they're likes
Seth,
upside down.
You are at Seth Dixon 007.
At Weekly Stack.
Do you have any underscores?
Fuck no. It's not 2007 on fucking Netscape, is it? Underscores. Jesus
All right,
Christ.
Gang. Thanks so much for tuning in.
We use numbers where I'm from.
0-1.
We'll be back next week.
Netscape.
Jesus fuck. Underscores.